D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, soon to be joined by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow. I just stumbled across this picture. It's going to be one hell of a summer for Brad Marchand, not just because he's a pending unrestricted free agent and he's probably going to get paid, but here's a picture of him. He's got a cigar in his mouth. He's got a beer tucked into his elbow, like in between his elbow and his side. He's got a spiked iced tea in one hand and a coffee in the other.
Marchand is living his best life. I love it.
He's ready. Did any of those guys sleep last night?
Oh, no.
No.
Marchand, wow.
They're going to have one hell of a summer. If you thought last summer was the summer of the Florida Panthers, there's a famous dive bar in Fort Lauderdale called the Elbow Room. And the Panthers have adopted this bar as their go-to. And after they won the Stanley Cup last year, all the players went there and they were sloshed, obviously. And the fans there were sloshed as well. They took the Stanley Cup for a dip in the Atlantic Ocean.
Good.
I believe Matthew Tkachuk ran out there with the Stanley Cup. Good thing it didn't float away. But I do specifically remember a clip from the Panthers after party where I think it was Matthew Tkachuk. So Elbow Room has a balcony. So Matthew Tkachuk and another Panthers player were on the balcony, and there was a Panthers fan, you know, at ground level outside, and they poured a beer from the Stanley Cup over the balcony into this guy's mouth as best they could.
Man,
what percentage of the beer do you think was consumed? And how much, like, probably made contact,
1% of the beer. Yeah, yeah. 1%
I was going to say at least 80% ended up on the guy.
Yes.
Not in his mouth. But you know what?
He doesn't care. Contest to judge.
He was having the time of his life. So the Florida Panthers, at least to me, not yet a dynasty. Josh on our text line says, so what's the opposite of a dynasty? Where you're the worst team 3 years in a row, the Titans are headed there.
That's a bad team. That's what that is.
Yeah, we don't have a name. We don't have a name for that.
Other than being a bad team, the Squirbies. I don't know. That's not even a word. It just sounds like bad.
Well, in the movies, when you win a big award, it's called, you know, it's an Oscar, right? Mm-hmm. Then there are the Golden Raspberry Awards, which are known as the Razzies, which is a parody award show. Honoring the worst of cinema. So
so this would be the worst of sports.
I also think there's like in the worst of cinema, it's like good, bad. Like there's some movies that you just know are really bad, but you kind of enjoy watching them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there's a bunch of movies like that. Where you're just like, I just can't watch this. This is unwatchable. I have to turn it. I can't get through this movie. Like a movie that you would get up and leave. Back when people would go to the movie theater. Did you ever walk out of a movie to say, I'm just not interested in this movie?
Nah. When I had to, no. I just sat through it.
Not even slip into another theater and watch something else? I don't think I've ever done that either.
Well, if I snuck in my younger days.
I fall asleep in some movie theater.
Oh, see, that's what I tend to do. If it's not good, I just fall asleep, But I'm getting my money's worth in that seat.
One texter says, dynastically bad is what the Titans are.
Okay.
But here's something.
We'll take that.
We're in the upside down.
Yes. Here's something that I wonder about. So I've read a few articles now about NFL teams going worst to first because it happens almost every year, right? Mm-hmm. A team that finishes last in its division finishes first in its division the following year. It actually did not happen last season, if I recall correctly. The Houston Texans did it a couple of years ago with C.J. Stroud. So, of course, the Titans are among those teams. And here's a question I have. Instead of saying, what are the Titans' odds of going from worst to first? Because I feel like that's the conversation, that's the easy conversation to have. Here's the conversation I want to have. Which NFL teams can you confidently say have worse odds than the Titans of going worst to first? And I'll give you your contenders other than the Tennessee Titans. The San Francisco 49ers, the Chicago Bears, the New England Patriots, the New Orleans Saints, the Las Vegas Raiders, the New York Giants, and the Cleveland Browns.
You just whipped them off. A couple in there. Who do the Titans rank above?
So
who?
So USA Today and ESPN both did this exercise,
right?
Ranking the teams from the best chance to the worst chance. USA Today had the Titans with the second best chance, behind only the San Francisco 49ers. Niners, Titans, Bears, Patriots, Saints, Raiders, Giants, Browns. Mm-hmm. ESPN had the Titans fifth, behind the Niners, Bears, Patriots, and Saints. Then the Titans, then the Raiders, Giants, and Browns. So both lists have the Raiders, Giants, and Browns sixth, seventh, and eighth. So which team are you confident, or teams, can you confidently say have worse odds than the Titans of going worst to first?
Raiders. Let me see. I would tend to think, because the Raiders, they hadn't found their quarterback.
Well, they did acquire Geno Smith.
Yeah, you're right. They did acquire Geno Smith.
They have Brock Bowers.
Yes.
They
but even with Brock Bowers last year, they didn't have a quarterback. They still were bad. They were 4-13. But you're right. They got Geno Smith. They got a new head coach. And Pete Carroll. So
hot shot rookie running back.
Yes.
Ashton Jeanty.
So I would tend to believe that the Raiders, I think the Raiders have a higher odds than the Titans, even though they play in the same division as the Kansas City Chiefs.
I think the only team I'm confident in that that will have worse odds than the Titans of going worst to first is the Browns. I think that's the only one off the top of my head. The Giants is interesting. The Giants are interesting to me.
I'm not going down that road again after what I did.
Yeah. Willie, you may want to stay out of this one with the Giants.
I took the Giants to make the playoffs last year. I'm not making that mistake again.
But
I'm with you. I tend probably the Cleveland Browns.
I think they are the only team out of the other worst to first candidates that I can confidently say have worse odds of doing it than the Titans. The Browns. I think that's it. You also have to factor in division as well.
Yeah.
So the Bears, they have to contend with the Packers, the Vikings, and the Lions. Mm-hmm. The Saints have to factor with the Falcons, Buccaneers, and Panthers. So maybe
There's hope. Saints may – I can see the Saints.
But with Tyler Shuck at starting quarterback, I don't know. See?
Yeah.
I would not I don't like their chances.
To me, I think it's the Browns. The Giants, again, are interesting.
Okay, but let's go back to the AFC South.
Okay.
Is there a scenario because I think we would agree, yes, where the wheels just fall off the other three teams?
Absolutely.
Like in this dream thing, it wouldn't be that you're winning like the NFC North. Like last year, it was just a loaded division. It would be you get better. And the other three teams just have a lot of things go really bad. And that could happen. If you look at the Jags, the Colts, and even the Texans, it could happen.
So this is what USA Today writes about the Titans. Again, they have the Titans ranked second behind the San Francisco 49ers.
I'm surprised.
What's working?
Aren't we surprised? Are they high?
On this list, yes.
Very surprised.
ESPN had the Titans fifth out of eight. But this is what USA Today said. Quote, Cam Ward might not have cleared the cliched bar of a generational, which I can say because it's quoted here, generational quarterback prospect, but it's easy to see why Titans brass figured he could be a transformative figure for the franchise. And combining high-end pocket poise with unique out-of-structure ability, he can immediately recalibrate an offense that was too frequently thrown off tilt by Will Levis's back-breaking mistakes in the face of pressure. The offensive line also looks to be as solid as it has been in years thanks to the signings of Dan Moore and Kevin Zeitler. New special teams coordinator John Fossil, who is widely regarded as one of the league's most innovative minds in his concentration, should clean up the rampant mistakes that further doomed last year's team, with the Jaguars and Colts undergoing their own major adjustments and the Texans yet to assert themselves as truly dominant. The AFC South seems more open than many other divisions.
I think that's what it ultimately boils down to, is no matter how improved the Las Vegas Raiders are, they still are in the division with the Kansas City Chiefs.
And the Chargers.
And the Broncos. No matter what you think of the New York Giants, they're still in the division with the Philadelphia Eagles, the reigning Super Bowl champs. They're still in the division with a surging Washington Commanders. So there's the difficulty is a little bit harder to go from worst to first. But then you look at the Titans, even though Houston has been the top dog the last previous two seasons, they haven't been the top dog by a wide margin. So it is conceivable to me that the Titans could theoretically even leapfrog the San Francisco 49ers based upon the division. Not necessarily because I think the Titans are better than San Francisco. It's based on the division that they're in.
So on ESPN, Willie's guy, Aaron Schatz, wrote this article. He has the Titans 5th out of 8 on this list. And he writes, again, I must repeat what I wrote about the Saints. You can't expect rookie quarterbacks to have good seasons. Yes, this is even true for first overall picks like Cam Ward. After all, Chicago's Caleb Williams finished 28th out of 32 qualifying quarterbacks in QBR last season. Then again, Will Levis was dead last out of 32 qualifying quarterbacks in QBR last season. So even a below average season for Ward will likely be an improvement for Tennessee. Like New Orleans, the Titans have bigger issues on the other side of the ball. Their defense projects at 30th in DVOA. There's a lot of hope around L'Jarius Sneed bouncing back from injury. I'm not sure about that. Or a big season from unheralded additions such as Ed Rusher, Draymond Jones. But the Titans really didn't gain much defensive talent this offseason and haven't drafted many contributors in recent years. They haven't used a first-round pick on a defensive player since Jeffrey Simmons in 2019.
Just so people know, DVOA, when you hear that, you're like, what the heck is DVOA? DVOA is just basically a percentage of how much of a percentage better are you than average, or how much minus percentage you are below average. That's just really what it is, DVOA. So it sounds complicated, and the formula is very complicated. I couldn't tell you what it is. But it's just a percentage. Like if you are 10% DVOA on offense, you're 10% better than the league average.
Which is good.
And it's switched for defense. I don't want to confuse people, but a minus DVOA is good. So if you're minus 10 in DVOA, you're 10% better than league average.
But, I mean, if you look at it, again, I go back to Houston has been able to win this division because this division is bad.
By default.
By default.
Yes. Now, and Houston, that's with a again, big, last exactly. year, for example, a big drop-off
absolutely.
By C.J. Stroud. A big drop-off from year one to year two in his numbers. But they still won the
division. And they still won the division at 10-7. Now, Houston, Indianapolis right behind at 8-9. But I look at this division, again, I look at it and say the easiest path to a worst to first just may be the AFC South. I'm not sure San Francisco, yes, they've re-signed Purdy. You got to – what's his name? The running back. Running back for San Francisco. Why am I forgetting this?
McCaffrey.
Name? McCaffrey. I was about to say McAllister. McCaffrey.
Deuce McAllister?
Yeah, exactly.
He was pretty good.
McCaffrey. Kevin you don't McAllister? Know if he's going to finish out the season. So, to me, they're going to have a difficult time because the L.A. Chargers are getting much better. That will be a much better team this year than they were last year because it's been proven that Jim Harbaugh, once he gets his teeth into a team, an organization or program, they improve the next following season. After his first season going to his second season. So that's going to be difficult in itself. And I'm just talking about the L.A. Chargers. I'm not talking about the rest of the teams within the division. Again, not the L.A.
Chargers. Yeah. Yep.
But when you look at the Titans, it's not much that they have to go through to get to the top spot. Again, Houston's going to be good. I get that. But it's not like they're going through the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
The Cincinnati Bengals, the Baltimore Ravens.
Correct. There's not that big bad in the AFC South, a final boss, as it were. Like you have.
I meant to say the Rams and not the Chargers. I meant to say the Rams and McVay in the NFC West.
Chargers, Rams.
Yeah.
You know, they play in the same building, right?
Yeah.
It all, you know.
I think so.
Mistakes happen. Yeah. One texter says, does anyone really think the Patriots will win the division against the Bills? The New England Patriots, speaking of awards, Razzies and Oscars and such, the New England Patriots have earned the Adam Vingan team that gets hyped up to an absolute extreme in the offseason who will ultimately disappoint everybody award.
It's not Indianapolis?
I was about to say, the award is the Indianapolis Colts Honorary Offseason Award. I'll come up with a better name. But, yeah, I'm not sure I buy the hype with the Patriots. I know they made a lot of moves, and there's the Mike Vrabel factor, all of those things. Again, the division plays a big role in it. I can't see the Patriots overtaking the Bills. Actually, speaking of top teams in the NFL, from Adam Schefter, former Packers cornerback Jaire Alexander has signed a one-year, $6 million deal with the Baltimore Ravens. He turned down more to be in Baltimore with his former college teammate, Lamar Jackson. So Jaire Alexander getting that Ravens rub, going to Baltimore after being let go by the Packers.
And listen, they're a good team. Now, whether they put it together and finally ultimately win, it seems like 1 year is this. Last year, it was the drop pass, you know, in the end zone, sort of reminiscing, Willie, to the old Cowboys. When I know it wasn't the Super Bowl, but you had the drop touchdown. What was the tight end's name from Randy? Was it? From the Cowboys that dropped it at number 88, that dropped the pass in the end zone.
Way back when?
Yeah.
Oh, Jackie Smith.
Yeah, was it Jackie Smith?
Yeah.
Yes, Jackie Smith. So they had a Jackie Smith moment, but in the AFC Championship game. So, again, they have two really good corners in Humphreys and a kid out of Clemson. I forgot his name. Wiggins? Is it Wiggins?
Yeah. Wiggins, yep.
Wiggins. Those two guys are pretty good. Now you add a Jaire Alexander into that culture. Never mind what he did, you know, in Green Bay, and it was good, and he had some troubles this past season. I'm sure I think he was injured.
Yes.
Some of it.
Did have a nice pick six against Will Levis, though.
When you go into that Baltimore Ravens build, it's just something changes. Something changes, or something gets enhanced once you walk in there. So, you know, I'm sure it'll work out there, but, you know, good for them.
Willie, you have something that you want David James to play?
Oh, yes, if he can get it. He brought up Jackie Smith. Comeback. It's a great Vern Lundquist call from Super Bowl 13, which I remember vividly as a kid because I was young. It was one of the first Super Bowls that I watched live, and it was a great game. It was the Terry Bradshaw versus Roger Staubach, and it was Franco Harris and Drew Pearson. And like it was the great characters. And you referred to Jackie Smith. There was it was a shootout, pretty much. The final score was 35-31, and Jackie Smith was a veteran tight end that was wide open in the end zone. He dropped the easiest touchdown ever, and he just freaked out on the field.
Yeah.
And Vern Lundquist had a great call, but you brought me down memory lane here. Let's see how quick David's skills are.
It's third down and three, Dallas at the Pittsburgh 10. Roger back to throw, has a man open in the end zone, caught, touchdown, dropped in the end zone. Jackie Smith all by himself. Oh, bless his heart, he's got to be the sickest man in America.
And yes, that's he probably Lundquist. Was. Yeah. Bless his heart, bless his heart.
Oh, bless his heart.
Even Vern was saying, bless your heart back then.
615-737-1025. We will be joined by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow. Coming up next, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan. Joined, as we are every Wednesday, by Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow on OutKick. So, Hutton, in the first hour,
yes, sir,
we had a spirited discussion on how we would define a dynasty in the wake of the Florida Panthers winning their second consecutive Stanley Cup, two Stanley Cups in three seasons, and a final appearance in the year that they did not win the Stanley Cup. My friend Mark Lazarus of The Athletic, he has a very rigid definition. He says that you have to win three consecutive titles in order to be considered a dynasty. Mine is not as rigid, and I actually was able to convince Derek of my definition, which is that you have to win at least three championships within a five-year span in order to be considered a dynasty. How would you define it, and are the Florida Panthers a dynasty?
See, I was no, not yet. I would say, man, so let's say the Chiefs. The Chiefs got to 3 and 4, right? And they won two of the three, but they got to three Super Bowls in 4 years. That was, to me, that was the run that they were going on a dynasty run. I think it's right there for me. and especially in hockey, especially in hockey. So I was very quick to say no. They are as close as any sport to win back to back and have the appearances that you're talking about and not be. But I think it's three, and I think it's over a span of about 4 to 5 years. Yeah. And I think it's about the appearances and how close you are. Not if you lose, but how you lose the one and then what you do in the other two and how dominant you are.
Well, that beats Willie's definition, I think.
So you're like me, Hutton. You're not going to be pinned down by rigid definitions. It's a little bit more of you know it when you see it, right?
Yeah, yes, you do. But again, it's also – it is three. I think it's three appearances in 5 years, 4 years. But again, like it's not like you limped into it and had like a backup quarterback play in one of those three, right? Like it is the consistency. And I also think just again, the schedule and the grueling grind that is the NHL, especially in that tournament, I think they're right there, and you can make the case for two for the NHL.
Well, I mean,
I wouldn't vote that way though.
And we were discussing like, okay, can it include like just, If not the three-peat or the 3 and 5 years, can it involve, you know, dominance within your conference? Because we brought up the Atlanta Braves and how they were dominant for a long time, but it only equated to one or two World Series. One World Series. So are they considered a dynasty? Yeah, they dominated, but ultimately they didn't win it all.
Down the totem pole here. I got to get pretty far down to get to divisions instead of championship division titles. Like I mean, if we're only talking, dynasties of a division, you know, like that. But I don't think we ever get to that debate at the bar. So if we're just going by bar rules, this is titles. This is titles, baby, and it's about producing when it matters in for the championship and not the. Not the regional, but the championship, the title.
Now, Hutt, we're going to discuss Diego Pavia, in a little bit. But I want to ask you about it because obviously, I'm sure you've heard or either saw his interview on Bustin' with the Boys and his bravado and his stance on, you know, who he is as an athlete and who he believes the Vanderbilt Commodores, you know, ultimately will be as a team. What do you think of this confidence? Because we haven't seen this in Vandy at all. Since I followed Vandy, I haven't seen a guy so confident in what he can do, and not just that, but confident in the program that he's in.
I think it's imperative that Vanderbilt has that guy. Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, and he chooses Vandy, and I don't care what he says or how confident he is. The dude stayed. So, he could have gone anywhere he wanted to, and he stayed. I'm glad he's that confident. I love it, and the fact that he went to Clark Lea and said, "Hey, I'm your guy. Time to win some titles." And then had the year that they had out of nowhere. It really felt out of nowhere coming off of the schedule that they were off of. And then to see what they were up against and then to have that first win against Virginia Tech and then off and running they were. I don't think it's a bad thing at all. And quite frankly, college football could use more of him.
Well, here from a Vanderbilt perspective.
Am I wrong on that?
Well, I think in terms of characters, we love characters like this. But Vanderbilt.
Willie, what about staying though? What about being confident and staying? We're talking about Vanderbilt here.
No question.
Just in general, at quarterback, I'm saying.
No question. And I go back a couple of years. I really wish Jerry Stackhouse might still be the coach if he could have gotten Scottie Pippen to buy into that and stay for one more year. Because I think that would have been a very good Vanderbilt team with Scottie Pippen, especially we're seeing. But Scottie Pippen decided to just leave and go pro. He probably could have done the let me cash in and just be the one-year guy for NIL, which he didn't do. But here from a Vanderbilt perspective is what I would worry about a little bit.
Sure.
He snuck up on people last year. The team snuck up on people. They're not going to do that again. They weren't going to, regardless of what he said on this podcast, But right. Now, especially what he said, and that is a precarious thing. It's like me as a Met fan. I know how much the Braves have dominated the Mets over the last few decades, and so I will never sit there and go, ha, the Braves, they're done. The Mets have got them. I will never, ever say that. And last night was a great example. The Mets had the game won. Braves snuck up and went. And I'm worried that the Braves are – they've jump-started the Braves season. The Braves are too talented. They could be back in the mix. So I'm always wary for Vanderbilt. I always think the adage – and I remember my baseball coaches and basketball coaches would share this to both teams. These are two completely different teams, different sports, but they would say the same thing. We can't afford to sit here and think that we're good because we've had some success here, because we're not more talented than a lot of the teams we're playing. So if we allow ourselves to believe that, that's when we're going to get nailed. We're going to get beat by teams that we shouldn't be beaten by. We have to always be understanding that we have to play and click on all cylinders to be effective. And so I love the swagger of Pavia, but I hope he understands that he can't just think, hey, we were good last year. I could have made $4 million by going somewhere else, so we must be really good, because that's the trap.
I would be I'm 1,000% on board with you. But I have the evidence of last year. They beat Bama, and they turned around and went on the road and beat Kentucky. And that entire week, they did national interview after national interview.
Fair.
Pavia was a national headline. He's on Dan Patrick's show on a Thursday, and he's showing up, and he turns around and has that locker room ready to go on the road and beat Kentucky. That, to me, is the difference in – I mean, the week of that game, fans weren't taking that lightly. You know, they didn't sneak up on Tennessee last year, you know, like the feeling of that week. Oh, we just can't lose this game. Just take care of it. That to me is that's the difference in Pavia, and that's the difference in having that guy at Vandy. I'm totally fine with the argument. We can't have the guy that's like locker room bulletin board material, but I'm glad that Vanderbilt has that player that has everybody turning their heads. And you know, they did it to Auburn. You know, he's going for the Iron Bowl. Mm-hmm. He's talking that trash on the – I mean, again, that was the storyline last year, and he handled it really well. And
did it while he was hurt. Yeah.
And had the – but the entire locker room gravitates towards him, and he's not like – I don't think he lets up he's dialed in even when he's getting all the hype. That was impressive to me. And again, I think it would have been very, very difficult for any team to beat Alabama, especially the way they did, in the historical manner that they did, and turn around and go on the road at Kentucky and not have a little letdown. And they went on the – I mean, it was a totally different game, and they were able to grind that game out. I thought that was impressive.
Hutton, I do want to ask you about something – related to the WNBA. The Indiana Fever and Connecticut Sun last night had what I would describe as a chippy contest, to say the least. And, you know, once again, Caitlin Clark is at the center of it all. And I was reading a column in the Washington Post by Candace Buckner with the headline, "Caitlin Clark, a Night of Skirmishes and a WNBA Product Out of Control." And
out of control.
Buckner writes part, quote, "After a night of physical fouls and hurt feelings, the WNBA clearly has an officiating problem. Clark is the crossover celebrity. If officiating ever allows her to get injured, then the scariest place on earth just might be among the casuals rioting outside the league office. But it shouldn't take unbridled anger to awaken the WNBA. The league has a problem, and it better fix it before the whole product turns foul." Your thoughts?
Oh, man. Okay. First part, the league, it sits back and lets this go on because this is like the Angel Reese 2.0, where the physical nature, the column of this is more of a headline than the discussion of this is more of a headline than the actual result of the game. The final score is not discussed. It's more or less like, are they going after Caitlin Clark?
Yes.
It's not an officiating problem. They would, if the league didn't want this, the officials would officiate this different. But again, it's clear they're being very physical with her. I would say this, though. At some point, Caitlin Clark has to fight back. And then we start to see the real – at what point does she stand up and just pop somebody after this? I mean, we haven't seen that yet.
We have not.
Do you guys agree with this, though, that I think – and it's getting mm-hmm. talked about at the college level as well – that women's basketball, because the athletes continue to evolve at a yeah. rapid rate with height, with strength, it just the genetics of the whole thing, it's moving fast, and I think it's making it a tricky game to officiate. Do you guys think so? Like the 20 or 30 years ago, the players were not as tall. Like there weren't people dunking. There weren't people who were 6'7", 6'8". There's just a dilemma that I think you have, and it happens in men's basketball, mm-hmm. of course. But I think it's there's not as much aerial stuff. So there's a lot of contact where you have to make some tricky decisions. And I think it sometimes gets lumped into we have an officiating problem. I just think it's a hard game to officiate.
Basketball, that's why, Shaquille O'Neal had such a problem, because you had to officiate him differently. You know, a foul for Shaq.
Right, he was on the cutting edge. Exactly. There had never been a player like that.
Absolutely.
Before.
So when you foul, what may seem like a hard foul may have just been, to Shaq, it felt like just a fly on me. And if Shaq didn't fall or do something, the ref didn't know how to call it.
Right. I will tell you exactly what our coach mm-hmm. coached us to do against Shaq, because he was a bad free throw shooter. This was at LSU. Vanderbilt beat them twice. I was on the team both times. Mm-hmm. 0 points in the two games. one assist. I had a nice little run off, a nice little section off the bench mm-hmm. in one of the games we beat them. Nice job by me. But good role play. I don't know what my plus minus was. But here, this was the – we would – strategically, when he caught the ball on what we would call the medium post or on the low post. So if he got the ball on the block, we knew that he would turn and dunk the ball. We did not have anybody who, if he caught the ball that deep, mm-hmm. you couldn't prevent him from dunking. So we would try to push him out to the medium post where he had to hit a jump hook, and he was pretty good at that, but you at least had a chance. Exactly. And we had a couple guys that were pretty good at doing it. Nobody was as big. But we were instructed, if he catches the ball in the low post, quote, take his arm off.
You had to.
You had to.
So big.
Because
you can't just foul him.
He would just take you right up to the rim and dunk you. Yeah. You could, if you kind of just tried to strip of the ball, you had no chance. So you had to take his arm off. That changed the officiating.
And I think that's what's going on with women's sports. It's they haven't, seen, people don't look at basketball, women's basketball, and think physicality. Well, they are physical. And just because you don't want it to be physical doesn't mean they are not. And you got to officiate the game based on the girls that are out there now and the physicality that they have now. And when it comes to Caitlin Clark, I think it's just what we would deem as just a regular foul in the NBA. It's deemed as, they're trying to take her out. They're trying to do this. She's a physical player. She matches physicality with physicality. And a lot of times she flops or she gets fouled hard. But we can't say that. I don't think the WNBA has a problem. I think they're allowing these girls to be physical because nobody wants to see a finesse game. They just don't, especially because they tried the finesse game with the NBA. It didn't work. WNBA. It didn't work. Luckily, Caitlin Clark came along, and her shooting, along with the other physicality of the sport, has elevated it, more so her shooting. But the game is a little bit physical now, and they got to play her physical, because if they don't, it's going to be threes raining across the gym all day and every day, and they understand that.
I'm all for the physical. I'm all for that, Mace. Last night was different, with what that was. Look, I would say this about Shaq. Shaq would still, there were instances where it was tough to officiate Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. Shaq still got up and went after Charles Barkley after a tough foul. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, there was some animosity there. There were the Jordan rules. Yeah, the best player in the league. There were the Jordan rules. They're protect their own. I just think at some point Clark's going to have to say something or get up and do something. If it's this egregious, and let me also be fair, she talks trash.
Oh, of course. So,
like, Yeah. So like there are verbal jabs that you don't hear that, you know, that are going to play a factor in this. It's part of the game, but also like, you know, if the league wants to curtail this, they could. It's not like they couldn't do something about this with fines and end it. I mean, fines in that league mean something. So I just think like it, last night with the, you know, the different, you know, the hip checked and then you have the shoulder and then you have the behind it, whatever it was. It's a storyline that it is good for the league. It is. It's either Angel Reese and the rivalry there, or it's Caitlin Clark and whether or not the players hate her, or now it's the officials are out, you know, they're too, now the league does. It's all peripheral things that are about her game. She's very good. Well, she's second in the league right now in the odds to win the MVP. The ratings are what they are. She is the league in terms of the hype. So, I mean, if you want the perception of, well, they're protecting her because she's the league, I think this is actually making it more likely people tune in again because you want to see the brawl for all. But again, the rivalry with Angel Reese continues because she got up the way she did after a take foul. If she stays on the floor and just like doesn't do anything, it's just kind of okay. We're not talking about anything with that game. We're talking about Caitlin Clark being 4-1 head to head against her. That's pretty much it. That keeps it going. And so does this. That's where I come across on it. If they wanted to just split it in half and take half of the physical nature of what we saw out, they could. But you know, they let that game go a little bit, clearly, for it to rise to that amount of friction.
Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mike with Hutton Withrow joining us, as he does every Wednesday on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick. Hutton, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
Yeah, I think, do we have any other update on the WNBA in Tennessee with what we saw like last fall with the announcement? You've heard anything about that?
I haven't
that?
Heard anything.
No.
There hasn't really been a whole lot. No. I heard Stephen A. Smith just in a long rant that did not have to do directly with the WNBA. He was talking about Ja Morant. Mm-hmm. But he mentioned it, that they're trying to get it. But it seems like this wave clearly is not happening. But I think in time, when there's another wave, that there'll be another run.
And they have to expand. They don't have enough teams. But he's saying like the Memphis is trying to get a team in FedEx Forum, right?
Yeah.
That's what Stephen A. was saying. Okay.
I think gotcha. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Hutton. I think it would be here. Or Clarksville. Or not out there.
We'll chat next week, Hutton.
Thank you, guys.
Yep.
615-737-1025. We mentioned Diego Pavia. He had a lot to say in an interview with Taylor Lewan and Will Compton on Bussin' with the Boys, and we'll discuss that coming up next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025, 1063, the game.
Vanderbilt's going to run Tennessee after this year. Like, this is going to be the new staple of like college football is going to happen here at Vanderbilt.
Do any of you and the boys ever like talk about that? Like, we got to be the state school.
Well,
we're in Nashville, Tennessee. In the Music City. Like, we need to be the brand of Tennessee.
Everyone wants to come to Tennessee because of Nashville. So they want to come to Nashville, so Vanderbilt. And then when we have like the most money in NIL, like, why not come here? So like, we literally just have to win this year and throughout the rest of the year. It'll take care of itself.
You think Vandy will have the most money in the game?
I think we'll be up there.
Yeah.
But, like, it's Nashville.
Yeah, there's a lot of big hitters around here.
Yeah.
They just need a team to believe in.
Yeah, that's all they need.
They need Diego Pavia.
That was Diego Pavia on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast.
And the Bussin' with the Boys, guys, they love to kind of keep the water flowing.
The
keep it flowing.
And they're good at it. Yeah,
they're good at it.
They are good at it.
Yeah, they make you feel comfortable. Exactly. Just let it rip.
Their bank accounts.
Want a beer? Here you go.
Their bank accounts will tell you that they are very good at it. But when I heard that, I said, you know who is not going to like this? Coach Willie. Not Willie Donick.
Right.
Coach Willie.
The heartbeat was racing a little bit. Like, oh, easy.
But I was when I heard this yesterday, and maybe this is not an apt comparison, but it sort of reminded me of the Vanderbilt-Tennessee baseball rivalry when Tony Vitello showed up in Knoxville. He has a brash attitude. His team took after him. We've seen, as Willie has described, the Tennessee Volunteers baseball team, Cobra Kai. They're yes. They're willing to play the villain. They're willing to be in your face. And I know that the Tennessee-Vanderbilt football rivalry is a lot more lopsided. It's a rivalry, by the way, that dates to 1892. But I love the injection of Diego Pavia into this rivalry. I think it'll make it even more interesting. Although, as I know a lot of Vols fans are going to point out on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, Tennessee did defeat Vanderbilt last year after falling behind 14-0 within the first 5 minutes. But as Hutton was talking about, Pavia has walked the walk. He helped engineer a huge upset last season of Alabama, and he did it in his previous stop at New Mexico State. That was not the first time. The win against Alabama was not the first time that a Diego Pavia-led team pulled off a huge upset. So although Diego Pavia did not beat Tennessee last season, I think it's okay. I think he talked the talk by beating Alabama last year.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can, at least during the regular season for Vandy, I don't think you could have asked for anything better. To get they were the number one team in the country, right? Coming in?
Alabama was the number one team in the country.
To get the number one team in the country in your on your playing surface and to stand toe-to-toe and then ultimately beat them, listen, that's a big notch on your belt. I mean, a huge notch. You've done something that other Vanderbilt quarterbacks haven't done, to beat the number one team in the country. And not just any old number one team, Alabama, who has basically dominated you. So you should be walking around tall. I love his confidence. I really do. Some people may say it borderline, you know, being arrogant. And I get it. But that's the space that I think guys and girls, when they're extremely competitive, that's the line they tote. And you got to find it within you to either stay on that line or not cross it and go over to arrogance. And I'm a little bit with Willie, because Willie and I, we were talking about this off the air, that even though you talked, you know, you had your talk and you walked it last year and people tried to come at you each and every game, it's different the next following season when I have a whole offseason of game plan for you and your brand of football. It's different. And I'm not saying that Pavia is not going to come in and do or replicate what he did last season. I hope he does. I think the kid has the confidence to do it. But what also happens, too, is because of the style that you play, these guys are they're coming at you.
Yeah.
And those hits are going to be a little bit harder this year than what they were at any point last year.
Before we get to Willie quickly, right on cue from an unnamed texter. This is embarrassing. Talking about walking the walk because they beat a top 10 team at home. And who else? Kentucky? First of all, Alabama was the number one team in the country. So, yes, they were technically a top 10 team. They were the number one team in the country. And then threw for 100 yards on 8 completions on the other team he called out. You've got to do a little more than just beat a team that ended up ranked around 15 when it was said and done. All I know is that the score says Vanderbilt, what was the final score?
40-35.
And the opponent that they beat was ranked where? Number one. Mm-hmm. So don't give me the top 10 team BS. They were the number one team in the country.
It was a pretty remarkable turn. And also, the context is how bad they were the year before.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't just bad by some Vanderbilt teams. They were, even by Vanderbilt's worst standards, about as bad as they've been. Mm-hmm. And he turned them around. Now, for the encore this year, I think there are a couple things that I'm really curious about. Because I do think that they were starting to figure him out and the offense out. It was Diego Pavia coupled, not only with his talent, but coupled with the New Mexico State thing that they had going, the coaches they brought over, the scheme that was very unique. Mm-hmm. Eli Stowers, who was a huge part of it, right, who's back again this year and could be a pretty good NFL prospect as a tight end. I think that took the league by surprise. They're like, wow, where did this come from? Where's the ball going? This little fake here, go there. they had a great feel for how to run that offense. But as the season went on, Diego Pavia, A, got a little banged up. Mm-hmm. B, the league started to understand as they studied the tape every week that, okay, here's how they're doing it, right? We're figuring it out a little bit. These defensive coordinators know what they're doing, and they are not the more talented team. So they hit a little bit of a wall, especially with the caliber of teams they were playing. So I'm looking to see, do they have another level of player, like maybe one or two more playmakers that can help take a little pressure off of Pavia, and maybe a wrinkle or two in the offense that add a little bit more of a dimension.
I think that's how they go about. That's what it's going to be. It's going to be how would Kill, how he redefines that offense. Because again, I have tape on you now, like real, like we've played you. It's not tape from New Mexico State. We've actually played you. So now we know how to better defend it the second go around. And what Kill has to do is, like you said, find those wrinkles within that offense, something that you can add, or a few more packages you can add that you maybe didn't do last year.
615-737-1025. Diego Pavia had some other interesting things to say on Bussin' with the Boys, and we'll discuss that next. But I'm going to see how many of you have our phone number on speed dial, because if you are caller number one, at 615-737-1025, you will win a pair of tickets to see Incubus at Bridgestone Arena a week from today, Wednesday, June 25th. Caller number one, 615-737-1025, Willie Darnick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game.